Welcome to Technotopia, the podcast about a better future. I'm John Biggs. Today on the show, we have Jamin Eadis, co-founder of Dash, a connected car company. This is Technotopia. Technotopia is brought to you by Happy Fun Corp. Happy Fun Corp is a design-driven technology company in Brooklyn, New York that specializes in building mobile and web applications for startups and Fortune 500 companies. Whether it's a new mobile or web application that will help people experience the internet in a fun new way, or software that will interface with a new piece of top-secret hardware, Happy Fun Corp is always up to the challenge. Big or small, Happy Fun Corp loves building software and loves working with great people. Come build with them. HappyFunCorp.com. Welcome back to Technotopia, the podcast about a better future. I'm here with Jamin Eadis. He's co-founder and CEO of Dash. Why don't you describe what you guys are working on now and how it all fits into a better future?
Sure. So, well, first of all, thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate that. So Dash, we set out to build a connected car platform. And to sort of put that into more product sensibility, we have a hardware and mobile software approach to connecting your phone to your vehicle with a low-cost device called an OBD, an onboard diagnostic device, plugged into any vehicle in the last 20 years. And then we gather data on your driver performance, sorry, your driver behavior and your vehicle performance. So how do we use that data? I mean, they're obviously product feature sets, but as an outcome, what we're looking to do is make driving smarter, safer, greener, and more affordable for people. And so we try and provide you the tools to do that. So that's the sort of the utopian part of what it is we're trying to do. It's very mission-driven as a company, and as founders, Brian Langle and myself, are particularly passionate around that safety issue, and it's one of the reasons why we're excited to be working with things like the DOT here in New York and part of Bill de Blasio's Vision Zero plan to reduce pedestrian fatalities or traffic-related fatalities to zero, which is obviously something that gets us out of bed every day.
Okay, so these little guys, these fit in, there's a port underneath like the dashboard, right? And you stick this little thing in there. And what is it? What sort of data is it? Is it supplying?
Yeah. So the port. If you haven't done so before, I encourage you to get on your hands and knees and look.
It's kind of a pain.
It is. It's essentially like a larger footprint than a USB. But this is a self-installed device. You plug it in one time, 2 seconds. It runs off the battery of your vehicle. So there's none of the kind of issues that you get with fitness trackers and smartwatches of running out of battery. This just runs off the car battery, and then you pair it with either Bluetooth 2, Bluetooth 4, Wi-Fi, or cellular. Now, the data that's coming out of the vehicle is regulated by the government. So it's been the same generic data set for the last 20 years. And that'll give you things like the speed that you're going, the engine temperature, your fuel levels, all of the usual suspects that you'll get from under the hood of the vehicle. And bear in mind, this is the same data that your mechanic can tap into when your engine light flashes off, and they'll diagnose that issue. That's only one of the data sets you can gather. The second one from under the vehicle is proprietary data that the OEMs typically keep for themselves and then resell. That is data sets that might be for the new windshield wiper array or backup sensors or some other esoteric sensor in a vehicle. Because bear in mind that a 2016 Audi is very different to a 1996 Toyota. There's 20 years worth of evolution in those sensors. Mm-hmm. But the same underlying sensor arrays are available. We pair that with the phone sensors. We pair it with the demographic information on the driver upon registration. And then we correlate that as well with things like what we call ambient information to do with driving. That'll be weather, it'll be traffic patterns, it'll be road conditions, and we pull all of that data together. Now, oftentimes, some of the data coming out of the car will be very boring. It'll be a one or a zero. Okay. Does it have this trouble code? Answer, no. But when you start looking at some of those driving behaviors correlated with vehicle performance and road conditions, you can see some very interesting insights.
Okay. So the road conditions are based on mapping, and then the data is based on the stuff that comes out of the car. So what is the future? I guess the question is, what is the future of a connected car like this? First off, are we going to have cars that are a lot more connected now in the next few years without these little dongles? And what sort of data can you pull out of a car that we're not currently pulling?
Yeah, so it's interesting to look at it from a more sort of macro level. So number one, the data that's accessible via these ports is accessible on 20 years worth of vehicles. So we're concerned initially with the retroactive and smartening of dumb vehicles, basically. And if we do our job right, then we should be continually improving that for the next 20 years worth of vehicles until self-driving cars become more mainstream. And we should talk about that sort of thesis as well. So there's a big addressable market today. People tend to hold on to their cars for 5 to 7 years, and cars tend to stay on the road for an average of 10 years. So even if we didn't do anything different from today, which is obviously foolish as a startup company, but even if we didn't change anything, then we should in principle still be valuable for 10 more years with our current feature set. So that's one perspective. The second thing is, you talk about mobility and sort of connected services today. Even if you look at cars rolling off the lot today in 2016 and look out at the fleets of 2017, there's still a fairly limited range of what you might define as connectivity. Because on the one hand, connecting your phone to your vehicle with a device, or just using privileged access to the Bluetooth to connect to the car, which the manufacturers can do with their own mobile suite. That's only one shade of connectivity. Some of them have their own Wi-Fi hotspots in them. Some of them will speak to road infrastructure and to dealership CRM and all that kind of stuff. Sometimes people think about connected car as the next generation of digital dashboard in the vehicle, and you look at Android Auto and Apple CarPlay, and then you pull that all the way out to fully autonomous self-driving vehicles. That's a pretty long spectrum. And it takes a pretty, even if you speak to the people at Google, and maybe there is a bit of expectation management here, but even the people working on those projects tend to say that it is about 20 to 25 years away from mainstream, because it's more than just tackling the technical problem. It's the regulatory landscape, it's the infrastructure hurdle, and frankly, the consumer readiness for self-driving car. Because if you, I don't know if you've been in a Tesla and experienced the autopilot mode. I was in a Tesla in Seattle last month, and my friend hit the button, and the damn car started to veer into the oncoming traffic lane. That's Tesla's the amazing cars. Elon Musk is an amazing individual, and it's a great company. But it's things are not ready for prime time. The self-driving car can't even see the lane markings on a snowy road right now. So we're still an awful long way. And I think you're going to require a generational change, not only in technology, but in infrastructure and consumer readiness before self-driving car is a real mainstream thing. So there's lots of different strands of mobility and connectedness until we get there. And our approach today, again, is a snapshot of what we're doing as a company. I'm trying to solve for the next 6 or 12 months, and what our roadmap looks like in a year or 36 months is pretty different. So if we can keep doing our job well, we'll still be around to do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So bottom line, when are we going to see self-driving cars that are actually working, right?
Well, you can go and see them now. You can see them in a racetrack.
When are we all going to? Yeah, exactly. You can see them in a racetrack. When are we all going to be riding around on them?
Yeah, if you take that racetrack sort of scenario, and then you keep increasing the circle from that, right? So it goes from a racetrack to a municipality, to a state or county, to a state, to a country, to multiple geographies. Everything is going to happen at differing times. I think self-driving has been quote unquote approved in a handful, probably one handful of states in the US, but what does that mean for China and Russia and Germany and the rest of the European Union? What does it mean on a federal level here in the US? It's still very, very complicated. And again, I think if you ask me to give a blanket statement about when will it be mainstream for most people within reach to have self-driving vehicles, I think you are looking at a generation, and it is 20 years away.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, everybody's talking about these things coming sooner than later. So I think one of the biggest questions, especially about self-driving stuff, is what happens when millions of essentially 18 to 34-year-old men who are basically dedicated their lives to driving taxis and trucks and everything are basically replaced by robots. What does that world look like after that happens?
Well, I think we've all seen analogies, right? Whether it's manufacturing going offshore, whether it's the outsourcing even of sort of high-end or quote-unquote high-quality jobs like software development going offshore. We've seen this happen, and we've all survived. And if countries and societies are in stasis, then frankly, they deserve to be reduced. What I will say is that what's interesting is that trucking is the number one job in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And actually, if you look at many countries outside of the U.S., it's also the number one job. So I think if you are any cohort of drivers who would be most worried, I think truckers are the ones who should be. Mm-hmm. But even then, I mean, there was just this company that came out of stealth last week, at least in certain quarters, called Otto, which is, I think, funded by Google or their ex-Google engineers.
Sure.
And they are retrofitting, I believe, existing truck fleets with self-driving technology. The problem is that doesn't address the fundamental hub and spoke infrastructure of trucking. You still need all that last mile stuff. You need to undock it from one truck to a smaller set of, like, that requires people. And so you can look if you look at shipping, I think that's probably the best analogy for where the computerization of trucking and driving in general will go. If you think about cranes and dock workers and how that generally got degraded and replaced, mm-hmm. I think that's, and even that took a long time because, and what were one of the biggest hurdles there was unions. I think you get the same thing happening for trucking or driving based unions. And my kids, am I going to suggest that they try and become professional drivers? Not unless they're going to replace Danica Patrick, no.
Sure. Okay, so the mission there is to basically wean the humanity away from driving, essentially.
Well, I don't think that's certainly not our mission at all. What we as a company, as Dash, want to do is try and empower drivers to drive smarter every day and make vehicle ownership and maintenance easier on all of us. That's what our mission is, and I think that, if you turn to any of the teams who are trying to build these self-driving companies, sensors and chassis in the Valley, I doubt many of them would say their primary goal is to remove the humanity from driving. But there are obviously cohorts of drivers who will never want to cede control of their stick shift and their steering wheel and their gas pedal. And there's a great romance involved in driving, and there are a lot of ancillary industries involved in driving that that cater to that humanity of driving. I think it's like any form of travel. There are more efficient ways than strapping a backpack on your back and jumping on a train from Beijing to Moscow. But damn it, if I wasn't going to do that Trans-Siberian Railway, I did it for the story and for the adventure. And I think there's the same kind of romance in driving that people are not going to give up. I think the bigger question becomes, what happens when the regulatory environment or governments impose legislation that makes you give up certain aspects of that control? What happens when insurance companies will not insure anyone but a self-driving vehicle? If that's what they're in the business of doing, insurance, it's up to them to say who they want to insure. And then, of course, you'll find specialist insurers who pop up to cater to the quote-unquote risky drivers who control their own car. So sure. It's going to be very, very interesting to see how it evolves. But what I can, with some sweeping generalization, state from my end is it's not going to happen overnight. There's simply too many moving parts to it. Human behavior and psychology is a tough thing to replace overnight.
Okay. So what does the world look like in 20 years? You said it's going to take a good generation for things to change. What do the roads look like? What does your company look like in 20 years?
Hopefully still in business. So, but without being too glib, what do the roads look like? I think you are going to find certain channels, routes, road types, whether commuter lanes, whether interstate, intercity highways. I think you're going to see the equivalent of a HOV lane for self-driving vehicles creeping in and taking more and more lanes. I think that people will still go from point A to point B, whether that's a joyride, a commute, a carpooling for soccer games. People will still need to get to point A to point B. I think the more interesting thing is, I mean, you'll see more sensors, of course, on vehicles and then around roads and bridges and et cetera. I think you'll see lives saved. I think you'll see more efficiency. I think you'll see a reduced impact on the environment. Those are all positive things mm-hmm. that we can anticipate. I think the more interesting question becomes, what's going on inside the vehicle? Because people will still need to go from home to school or from home to their work. It's not like the virtualization of the workforce has wiped out our need to have offices. So the question is, now you have an hour free per day, what are you going to do with that? And you know, the slightly depressing view is you're going to have another hour to play Angry Birds. And I think that, you know, because it goes back to what I was saying earlier on about the psychology and the human behaviors of all this kind of stuff. You know, it would be great if cars for an hour a day became extended classrooms. But at the end of the day, people have a limited amount of attention and energy, and maybe people will sleep for an hour more a day. Who knows? We will find a way to fill that time, and it won't necessarily be glamorous or world-improving on the inside of the vehicle, but there will be a lot of money to be made inside that vehicle when you're not controlling it. And I think that's what a lot of these companies, I mean, if you think about the overall mission of people like Google or Facebook and connecting people or monetizing what they do on the web, I think, you know, ultimately if you can, I mean, think about a pre-mobile world, right? We used to have to get to our desktops or our laptops to get online to use Google services. And mobility, and the reason they gave Android away was because they realized that there were periods around when you sat static where you could benefit from having access to the web, and mobile was the way that you did it. Now, when your eyes don't need to look out the road and they can look down, that's their real estate. And I think the moves that they are going to make on trying to get your attention during that extra hour a day will be the most eye-opening.
Interesting. So we're gonna travel is still going to be travel. We're not going to speed it up to the speed of light. So we're still going to be dealing with all sorts of. We're still dealing with the issue of hanging out in inside of a car, right? So that's a really interesting. Right. That's an interesting concept.
Yeah. So that's definitely one thing I would sort of caution against too much hyperbole that you inevitably get around self-driving cars is what do you do when you get that hour back? I think you'll see changes in downstream activities, things like vehicle ownership and maintenance, and what are the implications for that. I think you're going to train a generation of people to expect not to own vehicles, and you know who's going to be in the best position to monetize that. What happens to those extra dollars? You know, it's funny if you think about our mobile bills, our cell bills. I mean, I remember back in Europe when I first got my mobile phone in 1997, it seemed outrageous to pay, you know, £25 for what was a second landline, really. Mm-hmm. But now, you know, we probably, by the time you've added in all your fees and device amortization and all that kind of stuff, these days we probably don't blink at a $100 or $150 bill, many of us. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, are we going to increase the size of the wallet of what people or what companies can take from point A to point B? And if so, who's going to grab it? Is it GM? Is it Google? Is it Uber? Or is it some other new entrant who is going to appear between now and the next 20 years?
Fascinating. All right. So that's very, very cool. So where can people find out more about Dash and what you guys are working on?
Yeah. So if you go to dashmobile.co, and you can also find us through dash.myc, that'll take you to our website, and you know, right now what that does is it will showcase the software functions on Android and iOS and where you can buy the devices. And our reference device is $60, but you can buy devices as cheaply as $5. And then you know you can also read about some of the stuff that we are doing with organizations like the Department of Transportation, insurance companies, fleets, and car manufacturers and dealerships as well, because frankly, from an IoT perspective, if you look at the Internet of Things, I believe, you know, whether it's ourselves or other companies in the space, that you're going to see a real move towards enterprise for the commercialization of these technologies, because I think there's a fairly limited span of interest for simply gadgets bolting onto a smart home or a wrist or a car. And I think really the secret sauce will be services, software, and data. And that's certainly where we're placing our bets in the long term.
All right, very cool. All right, so thank you very much for joining us on Technotopia, a podcast about a better future. I'm John Biggs. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks.